the best that we can do is to try to avoid exacerbating the relationship and doing whatever little things we can do to ameliorate it. But it's there all the time, and it's a major fact of life. And it's going to remain the central fact of life in Indochina in the years to come. You don't agree?
No, I do agree with everything you just said. I just want to add something that, you know, for the future government of Cambodia, and of course that depends on the complexion and the constitution of that government, but nonetheless there's certain fundamental issues that will have to be re-examined, and one of it is, of course, immigration issue would be one. Another very potentially sensitive issue would be treaties that have been signed and concessions that have been made by various, particularly with the Hun Sen regime, Vietnam and Thailand, but also concessions that have been struck between various factions, informally or otherwise. Those issues will have to be come up for future discussion. I think Sihanouk has already mentioned that, you know, he will take a lead on some of those issues if and when he becomes comes in charge of the government. So that's an area to watch.
Nitiyama Pingpong from the Thai Service. I'm just curious about these three Indochina countries. What do you see their role or their needs and their wants, and what do they expect from ASEAN countries, if there should be any? I'm not talking about only Thailand, ASEAN as a whole. You talk in passing that Vietnam would like to be a member of ASEAN. Would ASEAN want Vietnam in? What would be the implication? What would be the easiest way to integrate Vietnam in? If somebody could help laying along the map along that line. Thank you.
Political or economic?
Well, on the purely economic side, I suppose that ASEAN represents natural trading partners for a lot of things, and the trade with ASEAN will grow, and that will be a major benefit for Vietnam also. The ASEAN countries will certainly be investors in Vietnam. They already are. that's all.
Fred, do you want to say anything?
I state the obvious. I think it's a question of scale. Laos, 3 million plus people. Cambodia, 8 million. Sorry, 4 million. Cambodia, 8 million. Vietnam, 70 plus and growing rapidly. It's a question of scale. Obviously, Vietnam represents a much more fertile field for investments and for trade relations in general than either of the other two. It strikes me that Cambodia's future is tied very strongly to Thailand and also to an extent to Vietnam rather than to ASEAN as a whole, whereas Vietnam covers the whole field, including Japan and the United States and Australia and the European community. So I think it's they have different needs and different potential.
Excuse me, I was just going to say about ASEAN, I mean, these countries, Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, because of history, have been isolated from kind of the general development of the world and of Southeast Asia. And joining ASEAN really means, you know, joining the world in a sense. And I think they're interested in it for many reasons, but that's one of them. It means that they're moving into the greater world.
Wander out of the economics of this for a minute. It also has always seemed to me that ASEAN represents, in the Vietnamese eyes, a counterbalance to China.
Did you have a follow-up question? Or?
Two follow-up questions. The first one is that the reason I was asking about ASEAN role because through the whole day, we have been more or less talking about Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia almost like in a vacuum, and that ASEAN is hovering around on the edge. That's why I was thinking that should ASEAN step forward and take charge or take a role? I know that ASEAN has identity problem too. They can't decide which way they want to be. They want to be in economic identity, political identity. That is the Asian way of doing things. On the other hand, Vietnam is a very attractive area of investment right now. And I would think that if you go to Bangkok, the word over there is that go east, young man. You have the CP group creating a whole lot of chicken and telecommunication industry is talking about Vietnam. I don't know how real money has gone over there, how much real money has gone over there, but it's a very attractive area of investment, so to speak, in Thailand. And that's why I was just thinking that is it time for ASEAN to step forward and look at it, or how does this, how do these three countries look at ASEAN and trying to make use of it? In the Chiang Kai government, there have been a lot of courting between Hun Sen and Chiang Kai. I don't know how much courting is going on, but a lot of Vietnamese official has been in Bangkok talking about more investment, more cooperation. On the other hand, Professor Brown, with the Khmer Rouge and the Thai military military connection, that kind of thing, we have been hearing all morning about the bleak picture in Cambodia and the political situation and so on, the UNTAC problem or mistake or failures. What exactly should we do to resolve it? I mean, this is a very naive question, but could anybody strengthen his hand telling the Thai government that stop it, go ahead and be grown up about it, or telling UNTAC that you step up and you do your job?
There's been a lot of diplomatic intercourse on this topic over the last 6 months with regard to the activities of Thai military and Thai commercial entities engaged in extractive enterprises from Cambodia. Three quarters of the hardwood now in Cambodia has gone. One quarter's left. My feeling is, to be blunt, that if there's a choice in terms of pressuring Thailand, if you want to use that term, between the stability of the current Chuen government and the stability of this very fractured Cambodian society, the choice of all external parties will to be maximize the stability of the Chuen government and not apply pressures that might result in the Thai military or the Thai power structure trying to destabilize the Chuen government. I think that there's no question of where you're going to put your money in that case, I regret to say. It does not augur well for Cambodia.
I just want to comment a little bit on the initial part of your question. I think ASEAN has always taken quite an active lead on this issue of Indochina. The question is, of course, is the split within ASEAN is, you know, which way should we go and how fast should we go? And I think that each country proceeds at it with each country within the ASEAN association proceed at its own pace. There is an obvious economic complementarity in a lot of ways. You're talking about an Indochina that is in needs and wants of almost everything, from capital to, you know, expertise to technology that the ASEAN countries can certainly provide. You're talking about geographical proximity. Landlocked Laos, for instance, you know, need an outlet, and that's, you know, going through Thailand or Vietnam. And so there's already been a proposal, a recent proposal that came from the Chiang Kai visit to Hanoi of a road linking, you know, Laos and Da Nang, and going all through the overland kind of bridge. So there is all of this obvious complementarity of needs and possibilities. There's has also been talked that, you know, Indochina is very attractive as a market, a source, and also as an economic backyard almost for ASEAN. You're talking about relocation of garment industries, for instance, in, you know, from Thailand to Laos, and all of those various things. And I think that from the point of view of Indochina, just the fact that ASEAN consists of so many different membering countries, that it does provide a very attractive diversification source of partnership. And so for those who are very nervous about the Savannah-Poom concept, for instance, you know, closer ties with, for instance, with Singapore or with Malaysia or Indonesia seems, you know, allow for that diversification of partnership. There's also an element, the strategic consideration. The Spratly, someone had mentioned earlier, the overlapping claims, and one of the claimant country, of course, is Vietnam. And I think that ASEAN has always found it to be a destabilizing factor for the region, that you have the split between and very isolated Indochina and a prosperous, vibrant, economically vibrant, and politically stable ASEAN countries. And so particularly you hear from the Malaysian sources that, you know, you do need to reintegrate Southeast Asia and to lessen that kind of disparity. The discussion, however, is on the mechanism for this reintegration. Everybody seemed to want it, but at what pace and through which avenue? And of course, on one hand, while the ASEAN countries seem to see the potentials in Indochina, at the same time, they try to look for ways that would minimize the cost of this reforging of this relationship. In other words, you know, there are certain structure and certain framework within ASEAN that would seriously be undermined if you have the integration of an economically less developed economies and certainly politically problematic societies. And so the discussion ranged from, well, maybe Indochina or at least Vietnam can come in as an observer status, or maybe we can create another association or organization that is parallel but outside of the ASEAN framework. So those are some of the points of discussion right now.
Okay, last question.
Okay, Chamran Tansambun from Thai Service. I'd like to hear from Dr. Hung your own assessment. I do not disagree with the notion of economic integration with ASEAN from Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia. But some years down the road, once the Vietnamese economy is revitalized, the normalization process is well underway, how likely do you see Vietnam as a major country or a major competitor in terms of foreign investment, particularly from the U.S., in terms of labor pool, or in terms of the resources base with all the countries in the ASEAN? You think that this thing would likely happen in how many years, how soon?
You basically had two questions here. One question about integration. The other question is about competition. So let me start with the question about competition first. You're talking about to what extent Vietnam within 5 years can be a rival for ASEAN to get foreign investment. My answer is that it all depends on the Vietnamese able to come up with two things. Number one, a sense of predictability and stability that would guarantee the foreigners to get some security when they begin long-term investment in Vietnam. And number two, a legal framework, a judicial system that make the foreigners and also for Vietnamese immigrants to feel secure that the investment is not going to be subject to political vagaries. So if these conditions are met, Vietnam with a huge population can be very attractive, because it's a new area to invest. That's number one. On integration, I have to make a distinction between cooperation and integration. Integration can be defined as a process or as an end result. In the end result, that would posit that the establishment of supranational authority that had not been reached, that level have not been reached even within ASEAN. Now, if even a closer degree of integration would need some kind of political compatibility. The European community, for example, takes a long while for Spain to be integrated after Franco's gone. So even within authoritarian society and democratic society, it's difficult to do it. There has not been successful integration, even no attempt to have integration between non-communist society and communist society. So something have to give.
Well, we have one more final question on Laos. Our sponsor asked for one question on Laos. So.
Thank you. I'm Bun Chan from VOA Laos section. I have a question for Mr. Johnson. I agree with you that in terms of international assistance, Laos doesn't have an urgent state, but Laos needs to improve itself also. Laos has been war for more than half century, and now it's about time, or maybe a decade ago, that Laos is to build its country. And I think that it has to start somewhere. You said that I agree also with you that it is the wrong road. But I see it's a possible solution that based on the given situation in Laos, such as there's a shift of a generation, the ruling leaders are getting growing older, and now there's a shift of generation. And also that now the ruling party even thinking of sending their children in Western countries. So that means Laos is opening up to the free enterprise. And also based on the potential in Laos, such as raw material potential, electricity, power, like you mentioned or you cited today, is it possible that if the government adopt the investment law that guarantee the foreign investment in Laos, that attract the foreign business communities to invest in Laos, if not for long term, it's short term, like commodity industries, or for long term for infrastructure? Thank you.
Well, I think there's kind of two questions there. One is foreign aid, and I couldn't agree more that Laos needs foreign aid. There's obviously limits to its absorptive capacity, but there are many reasons why foreign assistance would be, and even more foreign assistance would be good for Laos. The point I was making was that the amount of funds that the West and Japan and the other industrialized countries have for foreign assistance is limited, and there are many calls on that assistance. You just have to open up the paper and see all the countries are doing it. And in that competition, Laos, in spite of the many reasons for that it could use assistance and perhaps could use it more wisely than other places, is going to be in heavy competition. As far as being attractive to foreign investment, again, of course, there's a certain, it's competing with other places. As far as industry is concerned, I mean, if Vietnam is taking off in Vietnam with its more sophisticated infrastructure and more educated people and larger market and everything attracts investment, that investment, you know, might have gone to Laos otherwise. It's going to be difficult for Laos to compete. Certainly, when we look at the question of mineral development, Hunt Oil is already there. There's a British-French consortium that's looking for oil in Laos, and there's some hope that there will be oil in Laos, and that would certainly be good news for everybody. There is the potential of mineral extraction. I think that all of those are a ways down the road. I mean, there has to be lots of infrastructure development before it would be possible to have a really large, coal mining industry or iron mining or even an oil industry. So these are things, there's certainly the potential is there. The problem for Laos is that it's competing with other people and it has an isolated situation and it has a very poor infrastructure.
Thank you. Finally, we come to concluding remarks by Douglas Pike. I have two of these. The first is a conclusion that after listening to all of this, anyone who isn't thoroughly confused just doesn't know what's going on. The second is that I thank you very much for your attention, and it's been an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Doug. And I would like to thank Doug Pike, who was extremely helpful in organizing this with us. And I want to thank the panel members who, when Joe Bruns introduced us this morning, he looked for a thoughtful and informative and stimulating remarks, and we've had that and more. So we thank you all very much for being with us today. Thank you.